Circuit Court, Trigg County, now in session. Honorable Natalie White presiding.
Thank you. You may be seated. We're here today on two cases, Commonwealth versus Landon Stinson in 21 CR 89 and Commonwealth versus Landon Stinson in 21 CR 149. And Mr. Dethridge is present with Mr. Stinson, and the county Commonwealth attorney is present. And it looks like I was reviewing the case before coming in here. It looks like that there is a motion to amend conditions of pretrial release filed by Mr. Dethridge.
Correct, Your Honor.
Is that the only motion that is going to be heard today?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
As far as we're concerned.
Okay. Just to make sure, and then I also received the Commonwealth response to that motion. Mr. Dethridge, would you like to make an opening statement?
Yes, ma'am.
And let me... We neglected to attach that case. The memo said it was attached. I realized it wasn't. That's an unpublished case, and I think our rule requires us to attach those. So.
Okay, thank you.
We had good intentions. Judge, as you said, we're here today on a motion to amend the conditions of release. Currently, Mr. Stinson is being held on $2 million bail requirement. And it is our position that that is excessive. He is entitled to bail because bail has been set. He is entitled to reasonable bail that will assure his appearance at future proceedings. Now, we candidly admit that the charges are serious, but that's only one of the considerations that a court is to take under advisement when making a decision on what is reasonable bail under the circumstances. The two major considerations, I believe, and I believe our case law supports that, as well as our criminal rules and statutes, is that whether the accused is a flight risk, and whether the accused is a danger to the community. Mr. Stinson is a lifelong resident of Trigg and Christian counties. His mother currently lives in Cerulean. He has family here. All of his contacts are here. Mr. Stinson does not have any type of serious criminal history at all, and he is not a danger to the community. There's no record of violence that I'm aware of other than the current charges, to which he has pled not guilty, and to which he intends to resist and prove his innocence at trial. The case law is, and the statutes are clear, that in order to preserve the presumption of innocence to which he is entitled, as well as all accused persons, he has a right to get out of jail if possible and to participate in his defense. He has no means of effectively participating in the preparation of his defense while in jail. We can't even leave copies of his discovery and pleadings and things there because the other inmates get into them and they pass them around and they start talking about stuff. And it's just, and in order to meet and talk with him, we have to go to the jail and hope that there's a space available, and then meet, and you know, you're carrying stuff back and forth, and it's just not let's say, conducive to adequately preparing for a serious case like this. And what we're asking in this instance, Your Honor, is that Mr. Stinson's conditions of release be modified, and that he be granted some amount of reasonable bail that he has the ability to post, and that he be released to the custody of his mother, placed on home confinement there with a GPS ankle monitor at his expense, and that his whereabouts be limited to the home to which he is confined, to his lawyer's office, and to court, and any necessary medical treatment. We also request that there are two adults living there, his mother and his stepfather, and that he could, his stepfather runs a automotive repair business and sales business, and when his mother works at the Trigg County Hospital here, and when she's at work, he could be under the supervision of his stepfather there. His sister has also volunteered to participate, and they are committed to ensuring that he complies with any conditions that the court deems reasonable and that the court determines to impose. And so, based on the law, that he is entitled to reasonable bail, and that he does not present a danger to the community or a flight risk. Now, I know the Commonwealth's going to say, well, but he was picked up out in California. That is true. But he had, and there's ample evidence to support the fact that he had been planning a trip before these incidents ever occurred. And we have people who can verify that. He'd actually, I think, embarked on other trips earlier, and then always comes back home. The charges are serious, but I've been in situations where I've had two death penalty cases before. Both of those defendants were released on pretrial. They participated enthusiastically in the preparation of their defense. One was acquitted, and the other was convicted of reckless homicide. And that's why we need Mr. Stinson to be released, where he has access to us and we have access to him, so that he can be the benefit of the presumption of innocence, enjoy the benefit of the statutory scheme for releasing people accused of crimes, and that he can participate meaningfully in the preparation of his defense. We need his assistance. We need his input, and that is very, very difficult to accomplish if he is confined in jail. So, based on that, Your Honor, we do request that he be granted reasonable conditions.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Sylvie Wiggins.
Thank you, Your Honor. I have filed a written response. I am obviously opposed to any modification of the bond. I do wish to make argument, but I also wish to provide some brief proof from Detective Dick on the circumstances surrounding the defendant's flight to California and his ultimate apprehension. So if the court will allow that, I will call Detective Dick at this time.
If you would raise your right hand, do you swear or affirm to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes, ma'am, I do.
Please have a seat and state your name for the record.
My name is David Dick.
You may begin your questioning.
Detective Dick, where are you employed?
Dealing with some allergies.
It's okay.
I'm employed with the state police. I'm the detective sergeant.
And how long have you been employed with the state police?
Since 2011.
As a detective sergeant, what are your daily duties?
I oversee all incoming investigations that come in to Post 1 for the 11 counties in our district. I sign them out. I review cases on a daily. Basically, any investigation that comes through Post 1, I review and oversee.
Back in July of 2021, when these two murders occurred, what was your title at that time?
I was a detective in the General Investigations Office.
And are you the investigating detective in the case against the defendant, Landon Stinson?
Yes, ma'am, I am.
Are you aware of where the defendant was apprehended following the murders?
Yes, ma'am. Where Los Angeles, California.
And how many days following the murders was he apprehended in California? The murders occurred
I believe 4 days later.
Okay. And can you relate to the court what took place in order for him to be apprehended? Take her through the steps that you had to utilize to ultimately locate him in California.
Well, our first step, after speaking with family members of the deceased there on scene, we were concerned for Mr. Stinson's safety, so we started trying to locate his vehicle. We located his vehicle 13 hours later on a license plate reader in Texas, passing Interstate 40 around Amarillo. We then tried to pick up the vehicle some more, a license plate reader, and we finally located a good cell phone number that Mr. Stinson was using. At that time, we secured search warrants for an active ping for the phone and began to track that phone that he had contact with his mother with. I worked with local agencies, Los Angeles Sheriff's Department, as well as LAPD in trying to locate him. While a fugitive task force was actually dispatching to the area and going to start covering all grounds, Los Angeles Sheriff's Department located the vehicle and actually began to observe it in the meantime. At that time, Mr. Stinson dropped his phone somewhere that was still never recovered there in Los Angeles. It was the only lifeline that he still had because he destroyed his other phones before he left Katy's, Kentucky, and fled the state. He left that prepaid phone. We had a large estimation of the area, and we combed the area there in California, and we were unable to locate it. He was then apprehended by California Highway Patrol as he was walking down the freeway. It was like a six or eight lane freeway, which is clearly illegal in California. He was taken into custody at that time and held.
Was his truck located in California?
Yes, ma'am, it was, and we had the Los Angeles Sheriff's Department seize it, and we executed search warrants on it there.
Okay, and was he, obviously he wasn't in the vehicle, was walking down the freeway, but where was the vehicle located in relation to where the defendant was located, if you recall?
He was walking away from the vehicle. He was approximately a mile away walking down the freeway.
Okay. You've referenced some cell phones. You said you were able to ping a cell phone.
Yes, ma'am.
And get some ping information back from that particular phone. Did your investigation reveal when that particular phone was obtained by Mr. Stinson?
Mr. Stinson purchased a prepaid phone at a Walmart, I believe. It was on his trip to California. He purchased that in some minutes on the phone.
You've referenced some other cell phones that were destroyed. Were you able to determine that Mr. Stinson did have cell phones in his possession before leaving Kentucky at some point?
Yes, ma'am. His regular cell phone, I believe it was an AT&T iPhone that was actually under the account of his mother, Rhonda Neighbors. We executed a search warrant on the residence there in Katy's on Cerulean Road where the two homicides took place. We also executed a secondary search warrant on the apartment on Julian Road that Mr. Stinson had been occupying for less than 2 weeks. While waiting for that search warrant to be signed by the judge, we actually located a bag of paraphernalia just to the right of the driveway, as well as a destroyed cellular device.
Okay, so that cell phone was destroyed, and your investigation revealed that somewhere along the way he bought a phone and put some minutes on that, correct?
Yes.
And then again, in California, he had also gotten rid of that phone?
Yes. Sometime after... And I would have to go back and look, but if I recall correctly, sometime after the Los Angeles Sheriff's Department deputy started observing the vehicle, this is when the phone just kind of stayed live. He did not destroy the phone, but then he abandoned the phone.
Did you look into his financial records following the murders?
Yes, ma'am.
Did you determine where he banked?
Yes, ma'am. It was a banking location in Hawkinsville.
And were you able to determine if he withdrew any funds prior to going to California?
Yes, ma'am. At approximately, if I recall correctly, off the top of my head, 6:11 p.m., he is captured on surveillance video withdrawing all but approximately $300 from his checking account, which is leaves him. He pretty much drained his entire account. He then left there and filled up his truck, overdrawing the account before fleeing the state.
And there were a lot of family members at the scene, correct?
Yes, ma'am.
Did you talk to the family members at the scene?
Yes, ma'am, numerous.
Did anyone have any information as to where Landon Stinson was?
No, ma'am.
Did you talk to his mother?
Yes, ma'am.
She didn't know where he was?
Not at all.
Did she make any statements pertaining to where he might be?
No, ma'am. She said she tried to contact him numerous times and was unable to locate him. She and her husband both stated that if he's not here, he's either dead or he had something to do with this.
Did your investigation reveal whether the defendant told anyone he was going to California or going on any type of trip?
To our knowledge, we have not spoken with anyone who he actually told that he was going to California. When we interviewed him in Los Angeles, he stated that he told two people that he was leaving.
And who were those two people?
The two deceased.
So obviously,
there's no way to
couldn't interview them. No further questions of this witness at this time.
Cross-examination.
Good morning, Detective.
Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good, thank you. You decided kind of early on that Landon Stinson was your primary suspect in your investigation, did you not?
I wouldn't say that's totally accurate. As I testified before, his well-being was our first concern.
Right. And you stated that on his trip to California, he did call his mother.
No, sir. He did not call his mother until he got to California with a prepaid phone.
Right. But he did call his mother.
Once he got to California, yes, sir.
Okay. All right. You said that he went to an ATM and withdrew funds from his bank account?
Yes, he wiped out his checking account.
Okay. Well, I thought you said he left a small amount in there.
I don't think at the ATM it would let you withdraw the random, it was a round number.
Okay, well, let's clear
this. I believe it was around $300. So, and he had around $312 in the account.
So he didn't drain his account, he left $300 in there.
He did after he went and filled up his truck, overdrawing the account.
That wasn't what I asked you, was it?
No.
He went to the ATM.
Yes.
He withdrew
all the money that he could.
He withdrew money from the account, and there was $300 left in the account.
No. If you review the case file, he withdrew about $300, leaving maybe $7 or $12 in the account.
Okay,
that
I'm
the
sorry.
ATM wouldn't let you.
I misunderstood what you said. I apologize. Yes. So he withdrew money and embarked on his trip to California.
Yes, sir.
Okay. And that's perfectly natural, isn't it? If you're
going to
travel,
pick up and leave without telling anyone you're leaving?
No. Listen to my question, please.
Yes, sir.
It's perfectly natural. If you're going to take a trip, you're going to get some money.
I would not say that, sir.
With
it's 2022. That everyone takes debit cards.
To take the trip. So you think that's just really unusual that someone would withdraw money if they're going to drive to California?
In my training and experience, the only people who strictly carry cash and don't plan to use a debit card are people who don't want to be tracked.
Well, since I don't have a debit card, never had a debit card, if I go on a trip and I go and get cash, then I'm a suspect. That's unusual. Is that what you're saying?
Say that again. I'm sorry.
I don't have a debit card.
Okay.
Never had one.
Okay.
Objection. So I'm not sure what the relevance of Mr. Dethridge having a debit card is.
Well, if anybody
doesn't
have a debit card.
Is there a question coming?
I can take myself out of it. If someone doesn't have a debit card,
okay,
then they're planning a trip, California, Texas, wherever. and they go to the bank and withdraw money, are you telling us, telling this court, that that's unusual?
I don't think that applies, sir.
Doesn't apply.
But if someone doesn't have a debit card, they would already get money out. They wouldn't, if they already have a debit card, they don't have to withdraw the funds. They can use the debit card literally anywhere in the country.
I'm saying if I don't have a debit card, if someone doesn't have one, never had one.
Objection, relevance, Landon Stinson did have a debit card, and there's been testimony on that.
I'm
so
going
I think
to
we're
sustain.
Going astray here.
We'll move on. So you say you didn't talk to anyone who had any information that he was leaving?
No one.
Or that he had planned?
No one.
How many people have you talked to?
Several, sir.
Several. Okay. Did you see the motion that we filed?
Yes, sir, I did.
Did you read some of the letters and the affidavits?
Every one of them.
Did you notice that two of those people said he had mentioned taking a trip to California?
Are you speaking about the ex-girlfriend?
Well, she's one of them, yes.
She mentioned several dreams that they had over 16 years of leaving, yes, sir.
But she did mention that, she did state that he had told her that he was planning to go to California.
Well, his mother even made the statement talking about leaving one day, but they always said Florida.
Florida?
Until you presented your affidavit, no one has ever mentioned him ever talking about going to California, sir.
And did you see in among those documents the statement from the co-worker who said?
Yes, sir, and I personally questioned the legitimacy of it.
You questioned?
Yes,
okay.
Sir.
So if I ask you a question, if you saw it, you're going to throw in voluntarily that you question the legitimacy.
Yes, sir, I saw it.
Yeah, okay. So what we know is that Landon Stinson went to an ATM, withdrew money, took a trip to California, went through Texas. His plate was picked up there. He purchased a cell phone along the way. When he got to California, he called his mom. And he was apprehended walking down the side of a freeway.
Yes, sir.
Okay. And
after he abandoned the phone, his only lifeline to the outside world.
Well, you say abandoned.
And walked away from, he didn't have anywhere to live. He was living inside of his truck because he didn't have money to afford gas to go anywhere or another living situation. So he literally walked away from every outlet to the outside world.
Well, but you don't know where he was going.
No one does, sir. He gave a different.
I mean, you don't. When he was walking away, you don't know if he was planning to come back.
No,
what he was doing.
You're correct.
So, when you use the word abandon, that's your word.
I was speaking about the phone.
Okay. Well, you don't know if he was going to come back to the phone.
We never located it on his person.
My question is, you don't know if he intended.
Objection asked and answered. He's answered the question.
Right. I cannot speak for his actions and his thoughts. Myself.
That's right. And were you there before or after he was stopped by the California sheriff or whoever they were?
Once California Highway Patrol took him into custody, myself and another detective boarded the plane of the state police's and we flew to Los Angeles.
So you all were en route there?
No, sir.
You can't.
We didn't go wheels up until he was apprehended.
After he was apprehended, okay. I didn't understand your earlier testimony. I thought you said that you all went out there to assist with looking for him.
We were going to, and then he was apprehended.
Okay, I understand that.
Yes, sir.
Okay. And when he was apprehended, he fully cooperated, did he not?
With authorities?
Yes,
yes, sir.
Didn't cause any trouble?
No, they had no issue at all.
Okay. All right, that's all I have right now, Your Honor.
Redirect.
No further questions.
Okay. You may be excused.
Thank you.
Do you have any other witnesses?
No, Your Honor, I just have argument.
Okay.
Your Honor, I believe that the bond, which is set at $2 million in this case, is reasonable given the gravity of the offenses and the risk of flight. In determining bond, of course, the court looks at Rule 4.16. The amount of bail shall be sufficient to ensure compliance with the conditions of release set by the court. It shall not be oppressive and shall be commensurate with the gravity of the offense charged. Your Honor, we've got two homicides here. There are no greater offenses that are punishable under the criminal law. I think a bond in the amount that is set is reflective of the gravity of the offenses, and it should not be modified. Mr. Dethridge, on behalf of the defendant, has submitted these affidavits that have been talked about, trying to argue that the defendant is not a flight risk. I think it's clear he's a flight risk. You've heard testimony from Detective Dick about the defendant's actions following the murders. I think to argue that he simply went on a trip to California, withdrew all his funds, destroyed his cell phone, everything that else that he did is not a valid argument. I would even argue that anyone charged with double homicide is a flight risk just because of the nature of the charges. He's looking at life in the penitentiary or death. A jury could give him a death sentence on this case. There's just too much at stake to reduce the bond. Mr. Dethridge indicated that he's had two death penalty defendants that got out of jail, didn't have any problems. I've had the opposite. I've had two murder defendants that I have prosecuted that I recall that have gotten out of jail on a reduced bond. And neither one of them ended well. The first one, in the middle of the trial, he shot and killed himself. Again, the stakes are too high. The second one was the last murder case that I tried in this room, and the court reduced that defendant's bond. He was charged with murder, put him on an ankle monitor, as they have asked. And he didn't show up on the last day of the trial. He cut the monitor and fled. We had to finish the murder trial without him, and he was ultimately located months later in California. So again, the risk is just too great to release a defendant who's charged with these type of offenses on a reduced bond. You know, I'm sorry it's an inconvenience to them to have to prepare for trial in the jail, but that's not one of the criteria that's set forth in the law. And just because he can't post the bond doesn't mean it's excessive. So for all those reasons, the bond should not be modified. I do want to add that there's a lot of family members of the victims here today. They are willing to tell the court that they are opposed to the bond. I think it's appropriate for me just to tell the court that everybody on this side of the room is opposed to any release, Your Honor, or any reduction in bond, because it's just not appropriate in this case. So I would ask that you consider the proof and the arguments. And just what is at stake here, Your Honor, if this defendant is released? Just look at the gravity of the offenses when making your decision, and I would ask that you not modify the bond in any manner. Thank you.
Mr. Dethridge?
Your Honor, I thought we were just making open statements before, but I do have a little evidence I want to put on.
Okay, I'll let you do that.
Thank you. I'm going to call Taylor Creed. Up there, please, ma'am.
If you would, raise your right hand. Do you swear or affirm to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth? Please have a seat and state your name for the record.
Taylor Creed.
And where do you live, Taylor?
Hopkinsville.
Do you know Landon Stinson?
Yes.
Approximately how long have you known him?
About 15 years.
15 years? Have you and he dated, so to speak, off and on?
Yes.
During the time that you all were or have been together, what have you heard him talk about leaving the area and relocating?
Years ago, we were together.
You're going to need to speak up. Just
when we were together for a couple of years back around 2014 to 2016, we talked about like going to Montana. You know, moving there and stuff, and of course that never happened, but even after we broke up, you know, for good, when I lived on Davin Drive, he would talk about That was back in 2019. He would talk about going to Florida because that's where his, you know, mom was getting married and stuff, and he just liked it. He's always wanted to get out of the small town.
All right. Did you talk to him anytime during the summer of 2021?
Yes, June 30th.
June the 30th. What were the circumstances under which you were talking to him then?
I was at his house on Julian. I was visiting him for a couple of hours that night.
Did you hear him say anything about relocating or taking a trip then?
Yes, sir. He mentioned he was talking about wanting to either go to Florida or California. He said Florida because that's where his mom got married, and he liked it, like I said, and California because a buddy mentioned it, and he said that they're, you know, it was a good place to start.
Did he say why he wanted to leave?
Just that he's always wanted to just get out, and there were rehab facilities there that, you know, could be potentially a good thing for him.
Okay. So he wanted to participate in rehab?
Potentially, yes.
Okay. And he did. Did he have a drug problem at that time?
Yes.
All right. And he readily admitted it?
Yes.
All right. That's all I have, Your Honor.
Okay. Now, this is a little bit out of order for the production of proof here today. Is this your only witness that you have here?
One more?
Okay. Cross-examination.
He's having a little bit of a difficult time hearing. When did you and the defendant Landon Stinson break up?
Officially, somewhere in the time of 2016. But we were still off and on after that, too, just not regularly.
You said he had a substance abuse problem. Was that problem existed back in 2016 when you broke up as well? What kind of substance abuse problem did he have?
To my knowledge, weed, some pills, but I don't know what they were.
Cocaine?
Not to my knowledge.
What caused the two of you to break up?
We just split up.
Okay. So you split up in 2016. You were on again, off again. And then where did you see him on June 30th of 2021 when you said he was talking about moving?
At his duplex on Julian.
How long had he lived at that location?
I would say less than 2 weeks.
Did he bounce around a lot as far as housing?
No.
Where did he live?
I mean, before.
Prior to the Julian Road address.
He lived on Cerulean Road for quite a few years.
And so this conversation that you had with him on the 30th was just talking about him wanting to leave to go get substance abuse treatment?
It wasn't particular. He just wanted to go, like, just leave. He wanted to get out of the small town, like he's always said.
Did you know that he destroyed his phone before he left?
No, ma'am.
So you just heard that here today?
Mm-hmm.
Did you know that he withdrew everything from his bank account? You didn't know any of that?
No, ma'am.
Did you know that he didn't have any type of communication on him, any type of cell phone on him when he was located in California?
No.
Was the substance abuse issues a problem in your relationship?
No.
So you didn't mind that he used substances?
I mean, it was mostly just weed. I did not mind. He never did it around me.
So he was wanting to get treatment for weed? And not anything else?
I don't believe that it was weed.
Okay.
That he was
wanting to get treatment for? You
I
said
don't
he
specifically
told you.
Know. I know it was something more than that.
Are you afraid to testify as to what other substances you knew he used?
No, I can't say because I do not know what they are. I'm not fluent in drugs.
Do you ever see him use any substances?
Yes.
What kind?
I saw him sniff some stuff. I don't know what it was.
Some powder?
It was powder.
No further questions.
Redirect.
Your Honor, I have nothing further of this witness.
Okay, you may be excused. You may call your next witness.
Call Rhonda Neighbor.
Good
you could raise your right hand. Do you swear or affirm to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes, ma'am.
Please have a seat and state your name for the record.
Rhonda Neighbors.
Where do you live, Rhonda?
Live in Cerulean.
Are you Landon Stinson's mother?
Yes, sir, I am.
Are you married?
Yes, sir, I am.
What's the name of your husband?
Michael Neighbors.
And what does he do for a living?
He is a mechanic. He owns his own business.
Right. And what do you do?
I'm a registered nurse at Tree County Hospital.
Are you willing to take custody and responsibility of Landon if the court releases him unto your custody?
Yes, sir, I am.
Are you willing to supervise him?
Yes, sir.
Will your husband assist?
Yes, sir, he will.
Will your daughter assist?
Yes, sir, she will.
Are you willing to make sure that he abides by whatever conditions are imposed by the court?
I do.
To the best of your knowledge, is Landon able to post a $2 million bail?
No, sir.
Would he be financially able to post a $1 million bail?
No, sir.
$50,000?
No, sir.
Do you, if Landon were to be released as his mother, do you do you have any concern that he might flee?
I do not.
That he might what? I'm sorry.
Flee.
Okay.
Do you have any concern that he might be a danger to anyone?
I do not.
Okay. That's all I have at this time, Your Honor.
Cross-examination.
Ms. Neighbors, you said you're a nurse, so you work, correct?
Yes, ma'am.
And your husband works?
Yes, ma'am.
And your daughter works?
From home.
Okay. And so are y'all, all three of you guaranteeing the court that y'all would have eyes on him 24 hours a day, 7 days a week if he were released from custody?
Yes, ma'am.
How old is your son?
31.
Okay. He's obviously an adult. So you can't guarantee the court that you can control your son's actions, correct?
No, ma'am.
I mean, you can't guarantee the court that he won't do anything to harm himself or harm somebody else. You have an opinion on that, but you can't guarantee the court that, can you?
I can't control him. No, I cannot.
Okay. Thank you for answering my question, honestly. And I understand you're in a tough spot here. So you have told the court that he cannot post a $2 million bond, he can't post a $1 million bond, can't post a $50,000 cash bond. So what are you asking the court to reduce the bond to on this double homicide case?
To what he can afford.
Well, what is that?
I mean,
what specifically is being asked for?
Responsibility for him, okay. And so is my husband, and we would be with him 24/7.
And would it be you posting a bond if the court reduced the bond? Would you post it, or who would post it?
If there's a dollar amount posted, I would be the one to post it, I'm sure.
And what are you asking the court to set that bond amount at? Are you just asking the court to release him to your custody without any kind of financial security?
Your Honor, I'm going to make that.
Well, I think I'm able to ask her about it if she's going to be the one posting it, and she's telling the court that she's going to take responsibility for it.
I agree.
So what are you asking the court to set it at?
I think he should be released into our custody, and you're innocent until proven guilty.
So you don't think he should have to post any kind of financial security to be released from custody on a double homicide case?
If there needs to be a security, ma'am, then we would be willing to post a security, yes.
Will you acknowledge that you didn't know where your son was following the murders of the victims in this case?
No, I cannot locate him.
Okay. And you told Detective Dick that you didn't know where he was?
Correct.
When was the first time that you had contact with him after the murders?
July 4th.
And what was his location at that time?
California.
Okay. And you were aware that he had destroyed his cell phone prior to leaving Hopkinsville, prior to leaving Kentucky, to go out on his road trip?
After the fact, yes.
But you couldn't get a hold of him. And I imagine as a mom, you tried to call lots of times to find your son, right?
Yes, ma'am.
And you didn't know where he was, and you couldn't get a hold of him.
I thought my son was dead, ma'am.
And why did you think that?
Because my family had been murdered.
Did you hear Detective Dick's testimony about the statement that you made to him, that you were afraid that your son was either dead, or if he wasn't there, he was dead or had something to do with the murders?
Based on what they were telling us, yes.
No further questions.
Redirect.
Rhonda, if the court were to set bond at, let's say, $100,000 and authorize 10% to be posted, would you and your husband be able to post $10,000?
Yes.
You would?
Yes, sir.
All right. But Landon himself has no financial resources available to use for any type of bail, does he?
He does not.
And if he is placed in your custody and you observe or find out that he is violating a condition, are you willing to report that?
Yes, sir. I have fully cooperated with them throughout this entire time. I have been upfront and honest about everything. And if he doesn't do what he's supposed to do, then I would be the first one to call, and Detective Dick should be able to testify to that.
And the two victims in this case, who are known as Aunt Sue and Matthew.
Yes, sir.
Were they related to you?
Yes, sir.
In what regard? You mentioned your family.
Sue was my aunt, and Matthew would have been my cousin. She was more like a mom to me, and Matt was more like a son.
All right, thank you.
Any follow-up?
No.
Thank you. You may be excused. Do you have any other witnesses?
That's all the witnesses I have. This
okay. We were a little bit out of order. Ms. Obie Wiggins, do you have any other witnesses or any other proof?
No, Your Honor, I don't have any other witnesses. We did get out of order. I thought he had. I didn't realize he didn't say he had any proof. I didn't realize he had any proof. But I don't have any additional proof. I will just I'll rely upon my argument that I made. But after he goes, I do have some comments about the witnesses that testified.
Okay. Do you wish to make your closing now?
Leave.
She wants to go. Okay.
She would go first, and I would follow.
Okay. We've gone out of order the whole time. So.
Yeah.
I apologize for that. I thought we were getting opening statements, and then we were going to put on.
Okay.
Your Honor, I think it's even more clear now that the court cannot reduce the bond. They're asking the court to set the bond at basically a 10% bond, which would result in a $10,000 cash deposit. That's $5,000 per murder charge. That's totally not adequate for a murder charge. Again, I think the proof has been clear that he is a flight risk. I think now the court knows that he had a substance abuse problem, which also factors into the bond decision, I think. His mother, again, I acknowledge she's in a tough spot, but she can't control him. He's an adult. You know, she can say, I'll watch him and I'll report to the police or to the court if he's violating the bond. But at the end of the day, she can't watch him 24 hours a day. And so I just don't think under the law and under the particular facts of this case that any modification is appropriate. If the court is inclined to order a modification, it's certainly not appropriate under the law to just require $10,000 be posted on a double homicide case.
Thank you. Mr. Dethridge?
Thank you, Judge. The Commonwealth keeps talking about the seriousness of it and the amount of money. In truth and in reality, Judge, any amount that cannot be met is the equivalent of no bond at all. And in other words, he would be held, you know, if we set it at $2 million or $1 million or $500,000, whatever, He can't post that. So that's the same thing as not holding him without any bond. And that really is against our laws and our Constitution. That is excessive bail. It's no bail. And he's entitled to bail. We already know that. They have set bail. It was set at $2 million. So we know he's bailable. And the seriousness of the charge, according to law, is only one of the factors that the court is to take into consideration when authorizing the release of an accused person. We knew they were going to harp on his trip to California, but he had talked about that. He'd even, if you recall one of the affidavits, he had even told a co-worker that he was going there. He was working at Mr. Stinson was working at the Walmart Distribution Center in Hopkinsville at the time. But he was in the process of losing his job. So that motivated his trip to California just to get away from the problems here and start over. And he did call his mom once he got out there. He called his mother. So she knew where he was at the time. And again, he's entitled to reasonable conditions that will allow him to be the beneficiary of the presumption of innocence, and that will allow him to participate in the preparation of his defense to these very serious charges. And I have no doubt that should he deviate from those conditions, that his mother and his stepfather and his sister will immediately report that. They understand the seriousness of the charge, but they also understand that he needs to be out to participate in his defense. Probably my best guess is if he remains incarcerated, it reduces his effectiveness in the preparation of the defense by over 50%. It just can't be done in a meaningful fashion. And so what we just request that the court give this due consideration, consider the other factors, and set an amount that's reasonable, and set conditions and an amount that's reasonable, and with the amount itself, set an amount that can be obtained. And Commonwealth harps on $10,000, you know, not being enough. Well, his mom and stepfather would be liable for the whole $100,000 should he not comply with the conditions. The $10,000 is only posted as surety for that, so that's why we have asked for that amount, and we do believe under the circumstances that would be appropriate, Your Honor. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Obviously, that's a lot for the court to consider. I also will consider the case that you presented here today, and I will issue an opinion. Thank you all. What would the next court date entail? Are there going to be motions filed for your perspective? What are we looking at for next court date?
We'll have a series of motions throughout this case, Your Honor.
Okay.
And I'm glad this week it's brought that up, because we're probably going to need to set court dates as we go along so we can handle these motions.
Okay. What dates are you looking at? When do you think the next pretrial conference for any motions would be required?
I would say either December or January.
Okay. And you want that on a separate, you don't believe it can be done during a rule day? You want a separate time for that?
We can actually set it during a rule day unless we anticipate testimony, and then we can ask for a special day.
Okay. Because I come to the bench in January and would be at the trig rule day.
I have a suggestion. Can we just set the next pretrial conference for trig rule day in January and have a deadline as to any motions having to be filed on that day? And then we can set at rule day a separate evidentiary hearing date if we need it. Does that make sense?
Does that work for you? Okay. So let's put this on the next TRIG rule day for pretrial conference, both of those cases to run together.
And that's January 11th?
Yes.
And your docket's at 1 o'clock?
Yes. At 1 o'clock, and motions to be filed prior to that.
Judge, I have a trial I have a trial that starts on Monday of that week, and I know it's going to take 2 days. It may bleed over into three. I just don't know.
Well, can we set it for that date, and if that happens, you can let me know, and we can regroup with another date?
Work.
Okay, so let's have the next set of motions that you need to have ruled on filed before that rule day.
Is the court going to enter a scheduling order for deadlines for suppression motions, 404B notices, mental health notices,
will.
Things of that nature?
And that has not been. That was just, let me see. Okay, that was just an order of discovery and pretrial. Okay, that was done last September.
Yes, there's not been a scheduling order entered for trial purposes.
Okay, I will do that. Okay, the court will enter that scheduling order. All motions to be filed prior to the TRIG rule day. We'll put this on at January 11th at 1 o'clock. Anything else?
Nothing from the Commonwealth at this time.
And Mr. Dethridge?
Nothing further at this time, Your Honor.
Okay. Thank you all.
Thank you.